Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Health Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, the Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally for the famous Health Star Worldwide Network. I got that right. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have an exciting show planned for you today. So stay tuned. Yes, I say we because I don't have a little mouse in my pocket. Founder of The Caregiver Space, a very successful website, blog, and chat platform, along with a Facebook page with over 120,000 followers. This is Adrian Gruberg's third visit to co-hosting with me this week. You are very fortunate indeed to be able to call in and ask your most pressing questions to her. You do not want to miss this interview. I am your host, Dave Nassani. I hear Adrian laughing back there.
Yes, she, I am. Hi.
She's so humble, folks. Anyway, I'm your host, Dave Nassani. This show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that, well, they're caring and they're selfless and they're sacrificial. All those good things, right? But there's a bad thing. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. That's kind of what we're going to be talking about today and about the holidays as well. When mom isn't around anymore for Christmas, and that's my case because my mother is not around, first time in, well, since last Christmas. Well, folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask? Huh? What would you do? Well, the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. And unfortunately, folks, I've said it again and again and again, there's only one way out of the grief process. You got to go through the grief process. You know, you can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go under it. Got to go through it. I know I'm like a broken record, but one day you're going to get it, you know? So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And hey, you know, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blog. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's actually all about you. So go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and take our short quiz that will assess if you are a candidate for burnout. You know you are. And just for doing that, I'm going to email you my first book, absolutely free, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, absolutely free. And we'll tell you how to get a hold of Adrian Gruberg at the end of the show. All right, enough of that. Adrian, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
We are so honored to have you at the Health Star microphone. Thank you. Thank you for
taking it. It's my pleasure. You're welcome.
Good. Hey, are you getting any responses from your three visits to the show from any of your caregivers who happen to tune into the podcast, or you don't know yet?
I don't know yet.
I know. They're so silent, aren't they? They're just like, you know, the silent majority.
Yeah. The responses would be on the internet, and I'm, even though I founded it, I'm not the internet expert here. So if the responses are there, I would think that Corey or Paul would be more in touch with it. I'll check with them for next time.
Well, what a surprise. We would think that you would be so knowledgeable about the internet. It's kind of like Hillary. You know, we would expect that she would be, but she doesn't even know how to wipe down a hard drive. You know,
so. Yeah, right.
I hate to compare you with her. I'm sorry.
No.
It's, you know, during the holidays, it can be kind of rough. Like I said, this is my first Christmas without my mother. And in the back of my mind, I keep saying, oh, I've got to call her. Oh, she's not here.
Right.
I've got to make sure that she knows, she's not here. And what experience have you had with that, Adrian?
Well, I certainly know the feeling of, I'll get a pang of urgency to call my mother. You know, and it's like, well, she's been gone since 2004, Adrian. but it's still at 8 o'clock at night, which was my appointed time to call her. I will get that internal clock signaling me that get to the phone. I also have the feeling of missing my father when I need a liturgical question answered. Because he knew all the rules, and it's knowing that the anticipatory aspect of grief when I would know that, like, this might be my last Christmas with Steve, or you know, this could be the last Valentine's Day. So every time, it wasn't just, this is my first Christmas without him. You know, it was all of the things leading up to it, too. So that part of the stuff is not dealt with very much. And you do feel it when you know that somebody's prognosis is not great. It's a constant, you know, is it time, when? And there's just this grief that you live with until something does happen, because you can't get on with your life, and there's the guilt about wanting to get on with your life. So it's very complicated. The holidays bring all of this up.
Yeah, and I wasn't planning on doing this, but we have a very dear friend of ours who is going through some grief today. I just found out a few minutes ago, and Wendy, if you don't mind me mentioning this, because I really feel like we would be awry if we didn't acknowledge what you're going through and somehow try to comfort you. Can you share something about your uncle?
Actually, I can't right now.
Okay, I'm sorry. She just found out that her uncle is in the hospital and she can't go and minister to him because
he died a couple hours ago.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
And it's a very rough time of the year to lose someone, because there's so much preparation for everything going on around you. So it's tough.
Yeah,
I know. Wendy told me before, you know, when she called me to put me on the air, she let me know. So
I'm so sorry, Wendy. Our prayers go out to you and your family, and that God would manage to get you through this long day that you have. I know she told me that Tuesdays are her roughest day. Mm. What a trooper. But we just think of you and we pray for you and we minister to you. So here, feel our love, feel our support.
Feel the support, absolutely.
Because that's all caregivers have, is each other. And the support and the love, because love can be felt, you know? It's better felt than dealt, or better felt than telt, I heard. So sometimes a hug is just better. So I give you a hug, Wendy. Hope you feel it.
Thank
Hugs
you.
Are the best.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And we often hear things, Adrian, like, you know, my husband is the one with cancer, but now I'm the one in the hospital. Such a situation is all too common, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting. When we followed Steve's surgeon from New York to Boston when he had his last surgery in 2009. And I ended up in the hospital the day after his surgery. I was sleeping in his room. I woke up, and they thought that I had a ruptured appendix. They rushed me to the emergency room, and really, it was just the stress, but I was in such pain. I was put out for like 3 or 4 days. He was certain that I had deserted him. Huh. He had to be taken to see me, you know, because he was so worried that, you know, I just couldn't take it anymore and that I left. But that was far from the truth. There are people that leave, but not me.
Not Wendy.
Yeah.
You know, I read a bunch of stats on the Family Caregiver Alliance, and you know, who also offers great support. We love to plug those that do great jobs. Anyway, it's if you're a caregiving spouse between the ages of 66 and 96. Gosh, I hope I'm still not alive at 96. But and you are experiencing mental or emotional strain, you have a risk of dying that is 63% higher than that of people your age who are not caregiving. I'm sure that doesn't surprise you.
No, and many will pass before the person they're caring for.
Unfortunately, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. Let us know, Wendy, if we get any calls or when we get any calls. You know, older caregivers.
You do have a call. You have a Mr. Robert on the phone.
Well,
oh, Bob is on.
So let me put him through real quick.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, he should be on.
Robert, are you there?
Hello. I'm here. My name's Bob.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I've got a bit of a cold, so you'll have to excuse me.
Oh.
But tell Wendy I am really, really, really sorry for her loss, and I know how that works. So, but I want to say something about anticipatory grief. I went through it for 30 months. The day my wife was diagnosed, I was told privately, Bob, she shouldn't even be alive. So from that point on, I started my anticipatory grief, but I couldn't let her know that. I had to keep it stuck for 30 months. Then when she died, I went into grief. That lasted 4 long years. Mm-hmm. Now, piggybacking off what Dave just said, I got sick the first of this year, which was January 2015, or December 2014. I started getting sick. And that was a breakdown from all the stress for 30 months of caregiving and the 4 years of grief. And you talk about dying. I was afraid I wasn't. First, I was afraid I was going to die, and I was afraid I wasn't. I've had a bad, bad year. I'm doing well now because I fought back. But it does happen to these people. If you're a caregiver and you don't take a little time out for yourself, and I know people don't like to hear that, you're going to suffer like I did because I was 30 months, 24/7, and didn't back off or back away from anything, and I never got sick. But I have been sick the last year. So, yeah, there's payback there. You have to really be careful when you're caregiving.
You do.
That's wisdom.
But you're feeling better now.
I feel a lot better. I mean, here's the thing, other than cold, here's the thing about grief. Grief is it's very complex, and I don't think anybody really truly understands it because we all grieve in a different way. But in my case, I took it head on. I thought, you know, I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to do this myself. I know how to do this. And I didn't know anything. I sure thought I did. And I fought. I got thousands of pictures out. I everything I could do to make me cry, I did. And I think that was wrong. I think I should have been taking a break from all that instead of going 4 years, you know, full bore. It's like a bull in a china shop. I shouldn't have done that. But looking back, I mean, I wouldn't change anything now because, I mean, it's what I needed to do at the time. That's what my grief told me to do. And grief sits on your shoulder, and it becomes a part of you. It's in your head. Wherever you go, it's going to go with you.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're at a disco. You've got it with you. And that's how it kind of works. So you have to deal with it 24/7. You really do. It's in your nightmares. It's in your dreams. It's all around you. It's there. And you have to deal with it. But sometimes if you can get a 2 or 3 minute break now and again from what's going on in your life, it helped, and I didn't even allow myself that. So that's a tough time. You don't get over grief, you just get through it. That's how it works. I mean, it's that simple. And then you got the loneliness to deal with on the end of grief. When grief kind of disperses, then it's the loneliness. It's just a different faction of grief. And it is there. I feel it every Christmas. I have not put one Christmas tree ornament up this year. I've done nothing. I'm just going to sit here, go through Christmas like I do every year, and then hope for a better year next year because I'm lonely. And I can go out and visit the care homes, go out and see people, and I do that. But that doesn't help me. I can go to my grandkids and play with my grandkids. That doesn't help me. I'm missing the person that I love. I can't put my arms around her and hold her love. I can only think about it. It's all in memory. It's nothing that you can actually touch. And it creates a lot of loneliness. It's tough for these people out there, and that's who I'm speaking to, all these people that are lonely. You're not alone. There's a bunch of us out there, even the people that think we know what we're doing. We're lonely, and that's just the way it is. For me, anyway.
Wow. What do you do for a living, Bob?
I'm retired. I spent 25 years in the Air Force. I retired, and I went into the antique business for 20, and I haven't had a viable antique business, too, for 20 years. Because we've been doing that since the 70s. We've been made 39 years. So it was kind of like, you know, we've always been very busy. We've always worked together. And especially the last 20 years, we were partners in the business, in two businesses. And they were very successful, actually. Mm. But the minute she got sick, I was told her prognosis, I shut him down. I just shut him down. I mean, just loss of income. It's loss of everything. And it's the fact that you're going to lose your wife. It's pretty tough to deal with. But, you know, I travel. I go to California fishing a lot. Love to catch salmon. That's what I do. Once a year, for 30 to 70 days, I'll go to California and to Northern California redwoods. I call that God's country because it is so beautiful. The redwoods are all around you. The blessedness of it all. Crystal clear water. Fish and you're fishing. I mean, life is it's good for that moment in time. But it still comes back to the loneliness, always.
Mm. Well, Bob, I want to thank you for calling in. We really appreciate you sharing your heart with us.
Bob is one of our regular contributors.
Oh.
And he's written a book called Because of Annie, which is an extraordinary journey and love story. I can't recommend it enough because it will resonate with people. But the number of aspects of being married to someone with cancer and how much of it you actually end up going through. You're not the one that's going through the actual chemical aspects of chemo, but you're there sitting with that person and watching every single thing that's going on. So you are in and very much a part of illness, and it's got to be acknowledged. And not enough people get that acknowledgement, and I want to acknowledge all of those people. It's wow. Quite something. The book is great.
And how can we find the book to read? Is it on Amazon?
Yes. It's on Amazon, Amazon.com, ebook, all three formats. But the thing that when I joined the caregiver space, it was in like September of 2000, October 2014, and I was looking for a place where I could share my story because of Annie is so profound and so compelling, and it's everything in it is true. Even all the doctors, oncologists, specialists, they're all in it. I didn't hide any names or what they said, and I haven't had any throwback that I could, but I doubt it, because I tried to keep anything that was controversial out of the book because I wanted it to be a good book. But I did talk about some things that went on. But
great.
When I joined the Catholic space, I asked them. I didn't ask them if I could write. I just wrote a little article and. One of the girls at the time that was working there, she wrote me, said, would you like to write for us? And I said, I'd love to. I've been dying for 4 years to write for somebody because the cancer people won't take me. because they said your story is so profound, Bob. I said, you're missing the inspirational side of the story. You're looking at a disease that's got a lot of inspiration, a lot of good things happen. He said, yeah, but if we put that on a website, the people might lose hope. I said, hope? You know, they're not going to lose hope. If anything, it'll give them hope. There's breath, there's life. I mean, you can't take that away from people. But no one would touch it. They said, no, I don't think so. But when I got to the caregiver space, they said, not only will we do it, and that was Adrian and her crew, not only will we do it, we'll let you do what you want. Write the blog.
Right.
I published 48 blogs on there this year. My goal was 70, but I got sick and couldn't do 70, but I did do 48. And I've got a couple more ready to go out once Paul gets his stuff together. He's having a little problem with the network at the moment. But that's the place to write. And if you can write, Adrian would probably love to have you if you've got a story to tell.
People have stories to tell, and not enough people tell their stories we're giving them the ability to, whether it's on this show or on my site or on any of the other caregiver blogs, or if somebody wants to start their own blog. I mean, but the stories are so important in terms of helping people not feel quite so isolated, because they can learn that someone's going through somebody else is going through what they're going through.
There's comfort in that. Over 100,000 built-in followers.
Mm-hmm.
Well over 100,000. That is a place to log if you want to tell your story.
Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, we're up on a break. Let's take a break. And Wendy, try to see if we can improve Bob's quality of sound during the break. He sounds kind of bassy. It's hard to understand. Need to get him clearer he's on a speakerphone or something. Maybe you can experiment while we're on a break. So we'll be right back.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on HealthStar Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on HealthStar Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we are back with our guest host, Adrian Gruberg of the Caregiver Space.
Hello.
Yes, hi, you are still there. Love it when they're still there. You know, I was sharing a statistic before we took the call about older caregivers. They're not the only ones who put their health and well-being at risk. If you are a baby boomer who has assumed a caregiver role for your parents while simultaneously juggling work and raising adolescent children and what have you, you face also an increased risk for depression and chronic illness and a possible decline in quality of life. Is that true, Adrian?
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And very often, but in instances, they can be taking care of their parents and their children at the same time. Even if it's just a case of the measles, with kids, that becomes very intense, or a broken leg, or, sports injuries. It doesn't have to be a crippling disease. It can just be something that's, going to last, let's say, you know that your life is going to be hell for 2 weeks, you know, six yeah. months. There's a big difference when you know that there's, you know, there's an end in sight, but you can be dealing with your aging parents and your children, and it's a great deal to have to juggle.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to take you over the edge. It's that proverbial straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that going around. Now, Abraham, Bob was talking about he went through the grief process for 4 years. Unfortunately, we can't get him back on the phone because the quality is just so muffled.
Okay.
It's hard to understand what he's saying. So I'll let you do his talking for him. Do you think... you know, they say grief is different for everybody. Everybody grieves in their own way. Some people, I mean, I know a person who lost their fiance, and it's been about 5 or 6 years, and they are just as shaken up and torn up about it as day one. Is there any hope for these people? I mean, do you have to go through years and years and years of grief, or are there ways to shorten it? Because I'm sure everyone would want to shorten it, but then, you know, they don't want to violate the dignity of the relationship, and they would feel guilty if they got over it. Because
there are some people who attach guilt to being resilient. You know, like it for me, I'm still grieving for Steve, but I have someone in my life now. He's in California and in New York. It's not like we're living together, but I don't feel that I'm betraying Steve. I still miss him. I still have my pictures of him up all over the house. I can talk about him.
And your boyfriend is not threatened by
and he's
by
not
the memory
at all.
Of him?
He's not at all. And my husband was a very forceful individual and terribly charismatic and very well liked and a hard act to follow. So I never thought that, you know, someone would come in who was just like him. I knew that when I was ready, something would happen.
Yeah,
I'd make it happen. I did make it happen. I mean, I went on the dating sites, but you also have to know you have to have the sense that it's okay to continue to live your life, and I knew that it was okay because I did everything that I possibly could for my husband while he was alive. Everything. I have no regrets. Other than we didn't have more time together, but I have no regrets about my behavior during his illness. There was nothing else I could have done.
And how long did it take you to get to that point where grief was kind of like an enemy? It's always lurking, trying to beat you up and trying to get you down, trying to make you feel like you don't deserve happiness, you don't deserve to not be guilty, right? It's like your enemy.
Right. Well, I mean, I know that I went from counting the days that he was gone to counting the weeks to counting, you know, the number of Saturdays that had gone by to the number of months. And it'll be 5 years in March, and I'm not counting anymore. When March 19th rolls around, I will surely know what that date signifies in my life, and honor it. But I don't think that he would have wanted me to totally lose myself in the grief. And the fact that he expressed that to me may be what was needed. We discussed things. He told me who I couldn't go out with. There were certain people, he said, and you can't go out with this one, this one, this one, this one. But, you know, there is hope. which is what you asked me originally, that there's definitely hope, but you have to start talking about it and talking about it on the air, listening to other people talk about it. This is not something you're going to be able to read in a how-to book, but it's a dialogue, and if you go to a therapist for it or you go to support group therapy, there are lots and lots of groups for people who have lost people, and to get you over it. And when they say get over it, it really just means go through it. It's not like it goes away. It's still there. The loss is there. It's undeniable. But it's what you do with it.
And some people's temperaments and personalities are more conducive to dealing with it and moving on than others?
Absolutely. Yeah. And resiliency, as it turns out, there's a wonderful book. I can't lay my hands on it right now, but it is called Resiliency. And resiliency is one of the most important factors in long lives. 60 Minutes did an article many, many years ago on people who were over 100 who were still vital in their communities, had jobs, interacted with people constantly, and they had buried children, they had buried spouses for sure, but they were still going, and they loved life.
Uh-huh.
But they dealt with whatever they had to deal with in the way that they needed to deal with it, and then they continued. So the book Resiliency should probably be a bestseller again. it's a big deal when you think about it.
Yeah. Hey, we have another caller on the line. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
Hi.
Why don't you tell us what's your background in caregiving?
I realized as I was listening to you that the online is a little bit delayed from what you're talking about live. So I'm going to, my comments are going to scooch you guys back. But
that's so you don't curse and we can cut you out.
You fix those things in post, right? As Dave knows, my experience is that we had to say goodbye to my father-in-law almost exactly a year ago. It's been 13 months. Mm-hmm. And my mother-in-law, it'll be 13 years in March. So it's been quite some time. But what was coming up for me as I was listening to you guys talking about grief is that it's not an event. It's more of a process. Even though you have times when you think, oh, I'm done with that,
mm-hmm.
Something will trigger it, like any other, trauma, so to speak.
Like getting over an old boyfriend, and then all of a sudden, you have 5 years, you think you're over him, you're about to get married to somebody, and you see him walking down the street, and you just collapse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Weird.
I'll be walking by something. Maybe it's even a license plate on a car, and it's like, oh, he said hello. Yeah, he's still around. Doesn't go away.
Yeah. I must say, as hard as it was to lose my in-laws, I dread when it's my mom. So I've watched my friends go through their own parents, and of course my husband go through his parents, and it's different. As much as I love them, I didn't have as long of a relationship with them as I have had with my mom. So mm-hmm. Luckily my mom started young, so she's only 68.
Mm.
So I have, hopefully, decades to go, but I do dread that time.
I hope you have decades to go because I'm 67.
Yes,
and I don't feel it, so.
Yeah, she neither.
And since we're revealing ages, I'm 61.
Okay.
She has plenty of time. Plenty of time.
Sharon is the only one who we don't know how old she is.
Well, we know that her mother... she's at least, well, I don't know if
Oh, she's got to be in her 40s, I think. I don't know.
I would.
Oh,
I
you're so kind. No, no. My mom was 17 when she had me, and she hadn't quite reached her 18th birthday. So I'll be 51 in January.
Wow.
A few more weeks to go.
So how are the holidays?
People must mistake you as for sisters.
Oh, yeah. You know, when I was growing up, and still to this day, but we look very much alike. Mm-hmm. So, and she there was a time where she was teaching in a university where I was a student, and people would always confuse us. They would talk to me and start talking about something that I had no knowledge of. Like, you must be confusing me with my mother. And sure enough, they had been. And you know, she had the same experience when she would come and, you know, parent teacher. Oh, you must be Sharon's mother. You know, it's pretty obvious. So it's been fun to watch us grow up together.
See, with your mother as well, and she's 68. And the trick here is you're already thinking about, you know, what life might be like without her. So it just means that you have to really value and live to the fullest every single day.
Because so would that be called anticipatory grief that she's kind of going through?
A little bit being triggered, I guess, by other things going on around her. Because certainly, her mom is still young and vital.
Yeah.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, those things do come up, you know, especially when friends lose their parents or especially when they lose their mom. We have a friend that recently lost her mom. So, yeah, it does get, you know, that yikes. But luckily, my mom is vibrant enough that she texts and Facebooks and all of that, so I can always reach out to her and say, you know, just thinking about you. And I always get a nice, you know, hugs and kisses back.
And let me ask you, Sharon, how long should somebody grieve? And I know everyone's different, but is there like an ideal time where you got to say, okay, come on, we've got to move on?
Or you know, is that a no-no? When I was talking with my therapist, she would tell me that no, there's no specific time limit. But if your life is still being hampered by your grief after a year, then she would start to get concerned.
And define
like up until
hampered.
A year, you know, being able to do the typical things that you're used to doing, you know, going
right.
to work and functioning in life, you know, enjoying your friends and, you know, so to hibernate and do those things for a year is okay. That's you know, pretty, I don't want to say normal, but accepted. But if it's longer than that, then the therapist starts to get, you know, no, now I'm worried that you're slipping more than just grief. Now it's depression, and you know we need to do some things to work to get you back into life because you're still alive. You're not dead.
Right.
Yeah. And a while ago, I had a therapist on who was a grief counselor for pets, and I was shy. I shouldn't be because I'm a pet owner myself, and we've lost our share of pets, and I know that it's just as bad as losing a person, because I know that sounds terrible because it's only an animal, but you know, this animal, especially if it's a dog, gives you unconditional love, is the most excited person to see you when you get home. I mean, it's sad. So of course we're going to grieve more for somebody who loves us more, right? Didn't Jesus say those who love more, I forgot what he said, but you know what I'm saying. Grieves more, I guess.
Well, this summer, my dog, who I consider, you know, my friend, my companion, she's wonderful. I love my dog. She became paralyzed.
Oh no!
Just her back legs, all of a sudden, she just stopped, and it was like that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Poor thing.
I mean, she's fine now. She's, you know,
thank God.
She still walks a little bit like she's drunk, but.
Would she have a stroke or something?
No. She had a slip disc and one of them chipped and was bruising the rest of her spine. And
did they operate?
Yes, they operated. I took her in at 10 o'clock at night, and they did a CAT scan at 6 a.m. and started operating on her at 7 a.m. I was very lucky that I was near a good animal hospital because it was on a weekend. So, yeah, but, you know, I was frantic.
Sure. Anticipatory grief.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds so nice to say, doesn't it? But it's not a very good thing.
There is something about it that's not bad, though.
Uh-huh.
It does prepare you in a way.
Yeah.
It's always different than you think it's going to be, but it's not like my friends who've lost their husbands to heart attacks when they go, I don't feel so good, and then just die. They haven't had any prep. They're not the least bit prepared for this. It's like, how did you do this to me? How could you do this to me?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they've gone through the illness with somebody and might even feel some sense of relief that the pain is gone, that the process of dying is over. Because it's two totally different things. And it's like, which one's better? I couldn't tell you. I didn't go through quick. I went through 6 years, so.
Well, we're up on another break, guys. Sharon, any last words before we go to our break?
I was just going to say that is one of the things that my mom and I did talk about. And she always told me that that is easier on the patient and harder on the family. And the reverse is true. If it's long and drawn out, it's harder on the patient, but it's easier because the family gets to say goodbye in, you know, many ways. So
yeah,
it's the old this
for
is
whatever
gonna
that's
hurt,
worth.
It's the old this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you syndrome, right?
yeah,
no kidding.
As
no
we
kidding.
Give a spanking
well,
to
thank
our loved
you guys.
One. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Sharon, for calling in. We really appreciate it. And
thank you. Have a great week.
Hang in there. Have
happy
a great holiday,
holiday
as
have
well.
Have a happy holiday, yes.
So happy
likewise.
You still have your mother with you. What a blessing.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll be back.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
Again. Bye, guys.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmonelegonehundredwords.com.
and Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with co-hosts Dave Nassani and Adrian Gruberg. Adrian, what a great call, by the way.
I feel like I've been doing a lot of talking.
Say it again?
I feel like I've been talking too much.
No, that's what hosts do. They talk. And that's what co-hosts do. They co-talk.
Okay.
Hey, caregivers of every age and demography. Did I say that word right? Demography? No, I'm not putting the syllable on the right word.
Demographic.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
Wendy is always there to help out when needed. So, caregivers of every age and demographic complain of the following. And let me know if any of this rings a bell. So, this could be some of the symptoms of burnout, right? Sleep deprivation. They just can't sleep. Poor eating habits. Failure to exercise. Failure to stay in bed when ill. Postponement or failure to make medical appointments for themselves, of course. Mm-hmm. Any comment on that? Are these symptoms of burnout or what?
I took care of myself, and I made sure I got to the doctor, and I think that Steve made sure that I did. I was very lucky that way. Although I was a 24/7 caregiver, and I felt like I was on a leash, because I also had his 93-year-old mother who I was responsible for.
Sandwich generation.
Yeah.
So there are not only emotional symptoms of burnout, which maybe we didn't discuss yet, but there's certainly physical. There's things that we can physically do to help prevent burnout. But
yes,
there's also the emotional, which is a lot tougher to deal with, right?
Yes. Because emotional can be invisible. No one looking at Steve or I, no one knew that he was sick, and certainly no one knew that I was taking care of somebody, except Steve. He wanted it that way. It helped me because every day I would get up and present myself to the world as a whole well person who had a life, and not just like, I'm not going out today, I have to stay home, I have to be with them all day long. I took care of myself every single day.
Good.
No, I didn't go to the gym, and I didn't work out, and I probably didn't eat properly. Mm-hmm. I know I didn't eat properly. I was eating what they ate, and everything that they wanted was just instant gratification food. So you need to have a if you can, you should try and make a plan for yourself and follow it. I mean, if I had been preparing healthy meals for myself, there's no question about the fact that Steve would have eaten what I was preparing.
Yeah.
But I just let it go. You can't just let things go. It has to be something that you're actually participating in. You're participating in giving the care to the other person. You have to give the care to yourself, too.
Yeah, and you know, there's a difference between, you know, passive neglect and, let's just call it destructive neglect. For example, some families are also at increased risk for depression and excessive use of alcohol or tobacco and
right,
other drugs. And
mm-hmm,
so it can get a lot worse than just not exercising and
oh, yes,
losing some sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like being on an emotional roller coaster. You know, on the one hand, caring for your family member demonstrates love and commitment and can, you know, be a very rewarding personal experience. But on the other hand, exhaustion, worry, inadequate resources, and continuous care demands are, you know, they're emotionally stressful.
Yeah, but there's one aspect that people don't really think about. It's the child looking for acceptance and love from the parent. You know, like, what do I have to do to make you tell me that you love me? I just want you to tell me that you love me.
You sound like the song, what do I have to do to make you love me?
But you know what the I'm talking about here.
Yes.
You know, they're still seeking their parents' approval and love, or they still want to be their spouse's everything, which is not realistic. But they want to be loved a certain way, thought of as perfect, and they. There's also the aspect of this is something worthwhile that I'm doing, much more worthwhile than anything else that I've been doing. I'm going to let go of my job and just take care of my mother because she values me. She couldn't do anything. She couldn't exist without me and my help. It's a self-aggrandizing thing as well.
Yeah, a lot of things going on beneath the surface that we may not be aware of, you know?
Absolutely.
But again, caregivers are more prone to chronic illnesses than non-caregivers, you know, and that includes, you know, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and a tendency to be overweight, for example.
Yep.
And so again, statistics, they don't lie. An estimated 46% to 59% of caregivers are clinically depressed. Now, that's an alarming statistic and probably needs to be on antidepressants.
Well, I was on antidepressants long before my husband took ill. So that part of me, and God knows how many years of therapy, I knew who I was and what I was doing. I mean, I had already resolved issues, and that may have had a lot to do with why I could handle the caregiving aspect and the anticipatory grief, the grief, and getting on with life.
Yeah.
Because I had resolved the issues. There was nothing hanging.
Yeah. Well, look at the clock, Adrian. Where has the time gone? My gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
Seems like we just got started. We have 3 minutes before we have to sign off. So let's talk about how people can get a hold of the great Adrian Gruberg. And just
for God's sake.
Briefly, in a minute or so, tell us, you know, how you help the caregivers and how they can plug into that.
Well, they can go to the caregiver space, and it has it's thecaregiverspace.org, and they can reach me, Adrienne, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org, and I do answer my mail. They can join the forums and see. Be totally passive and just look at what other people are going through, sign up, participate. They can visit the Facebook page and see what we're all about.
The forums are fun. I love them. You just go in and there's a stranger there and you strike up a conversation and either they bless me or I bless them or we bless each other. It's great.
Yes. Yes. And it's a wonderful feeling for me. I mean, yes, of course, after I stopped caregiving, there was a huge hole in my life, but then I ended up filling it with caregiving for caregivers. So that's what you're doing. You're the caregiver's caregiver.
Yeah, and it sure takes our mind off of our stresses and our problems, doesn't it?
Yes,
well, thank you again, Adrian. We're so
appreciative. You're very welcome.
And just let us know the next time you can come on, too. We love having you. You're a wonderful compliment. To my maleness, because you're a female, and you know we both use opposite sides of our brain to deal with caregivers. But thank you, folks, for tuning in. Don't forget, we are here every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern. And this show you can listen to on a recorded podcast in about 24 hours or so, I think, perhaps 18 to 24 hours. It depends on... Oh, we're going to give Wendy some grace here. Better make it 24 hours. So thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
And have a happy holiday.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on HealthStar Worldwide.